Welcome to the Latter Gay Stories podcast, the show that features real people, real stories, and real talk. This is the intersection of sexuality and reality. Now, here's the voice of the show, Kyle Ashworth.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Latter Gay Stories podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Ashworth. The Latter Gay Stories podcast is made possible through generous donors, through viewers and listeners just like you. If you are watching this episode or listening to it on one of our podcast channels and want to support and help financially build the mission and build the reach of the Latter Gay Stories podcast, we invite you to make a donation. You can make a monthly donation, which helps us continually fund the podcast, or a single one-time donation by two simple and easy ways. First, by visiting our website at lattergaystories.org and clicking on the Donate tab. Or you can send us a simple and easy text. You can text the word STORIES to 77948. That's texting the word STORIES to 77948, and your single one-time or monthly donation will help us build bigger and stronger bridges between the LDS and LGBT communities. Today's podcast episode features Greg Barnett. Greg is a gay man who is navigating life outside of the closet and outside of the church. Greg is working to build bigger and stronger bridges between his community, the LGBT community, and those within the LDS church. Greg will talk a little bit about his coming out experience, also what it was like to serve a mission as a gay man, and we're going to discuss a unique opportunity that Greg had where he was given the opportunity to speak in a sacrament meeting specifically about the LGBTQ topic. And we'll even have a recording of that sacrament meeting talk for you a little later in the podcast today. Without further ado, we want to welcome to the podcast, Greg Barnett. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, for sure.
And thanks for sharing your story. Where do we begin?
I don't know. Wherever you want.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us who Greg is, and eventually we'll work our way to where we're at today.
All right. My name is Greg. I live in Los Angeles. I'm an actor and a teacher. The thing that I do that I love the most is I work for a company called Story Pirates, and we take stories written by kids and turn them into shows for elementary schools and performing arts centers. We have a podcast and books and albums and all kinds of great stuff. It's very fulfilling work.
Great.
Yeah.
And so tell us a little bit about Story Pirates, because I know it's been kind of dancing around the Intermountain West.
Yeah, it has. We just performed with the Utah Symphony. It was our first collaboration with the symphony. So we took some stories written by kids and paired them with classical music pieces. Perform them. One of the stories is written by a kid in Utah, and he was there at the show. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's just a great way to empower kids to write and create and foster that spirit and keep it going.
When I first heard of Story Pirates, I immediately thought of the gummy bear commercial, mm-hmm. where all the CEOs were sitting around a table, but they dubbed in the children's voices.
Oh yeah.
So I thought that's a great idea.
It's a little bit like that, yeah.
That's the idea behind Story Pirates. And LA.
Yeah.
How do you like LA?
I like it okay. Not a place I love. It feels a little too big for me, but that's where my life is. So
you grew up in Utah.
I did.
Small town America, big city.
I went to elementary school in Salt Lake and then moved down to Richfield, which is a much smaller town for high school.
Much smaller
town. Much smaller town, yeah.
Let's start there. Tell us what life is like growing up in a small town and knowing that you're gay.
So I want to be upfront and say that I had a pretty atypical experience as a gay Mormon growing up. I had great friends. I was involved in speech and drama and band and had a very supportive network around me. I wasn't out in high school at all because even though I feel like it's not something I was necessarily ashamed of, being an out gay person in a small conservative town is dangerous and can be scary. So I wasn't out in high school, but my parents knew I was gay and my bishop knew, and they were all fantastic. And so I know a lot of people experience a lot of self-hatred or feelings of worthlessness and depression and suicidality. And I never experienced any of that, luckily for me. I had a great experience growing up in high school, and I often visit my town still. And I think this is a wonderful town. I don't belong here, but it's beautiful. And I have very fond memories of growing up in Richfield.
So let's talk a little bit about your coming out experience. Mm-hmm. How did that happen? What were the events leading up to it?
So when I was 13, 14, 15, somewhere in there, my parents found some pornography on the computer, and that's how they found out.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. I know. It's amazing a lightning bolt didn't strike me dead.
So this was on dial-up, probably, then.
Yeah, it definitely was. It took a while for that stuff to load.
This is so 56K pornography. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yep. And then in college, I went to Disney World to work on the college program there for a semester. And it was the first time that anybody ever made a pass at me. And it freaked me out. And so I have a close family friend who's gay. So I called him up and just like didn't know what to do and was terrified. And he sort of talked me through it a little bit. And he's like, you know, you should really find a friend, someone you trust who you can talk to about this. So my best friend at the time, I went on a walk with her and sort of spilled the beans. And she's been a great support ever since. And then since that moment, it's just been like a few friends here or there I would talk to about it. And then I got to a point where I wasn't necessarily out, but I wasn't shy talking about it if anybody wanted to. And then in 2012... I decided it was time, so I wrote a blog post, as is the thing to do these days. That was in October of 2012, I believe, and just sort of put it out there for the world. And the response I received was overwhelmingly positive. So,
what spurred you to want to go public with your story?
From what I remember, it felt like the right time. And then there, I'm sure you're familiar with Brené Brown.
Sure.
So I've been listening to her TED Talks, and she says in one of them, you can't fully love someone unless you fully know them. And so I just figured, well, if I want the people in my life who I love to love me fully, then I need to be my full authentic self with them. And so that was a big part of it.
So with your parents, how did that experience go? So they find things on the computer, they approach you, you spill the beans then. I think of listeners of this podcast who are likely closeted, which I think a lot of this podcast will apply to them. How was your parents' reaction? What compelled them to reach into your world a little more? Did you allow them to reach far into your world? Were you still hesitant and reserved?
So in my family, for better or worse, we don't have very good communication skills. Like, we're fine and we love each other and we're there for each other when it counts. But in the day-to-day communication, it's just not something that we ever did. And that remains largely true to this day, which is, you know, it is what it is. But I think my parents were great. My mom has a brother who was gay for many years, out gay. He's not anymore. And so she, I think, was fine. And the whole time growing up, and my mom passed away a few years ago, but up until then, she would always say, I just want you to be happy. So I know my mom was very supportive of whatever healthy life choices we would want to make. My dad has a hard time with it. He has always been very loving and supportive of me and my siblings and our choices in life. But I know it's hard for him. The conversation was never negative, I guess is the right word. It was always approached from a place of love and positivity. And I think part of that is because for a long time I decided to stay in the church and really work it out inside of the church and the norms and standards there. I think it's been a little harder since I've steered away from the church, but I know my dad still loves me and is proud of me and happy with my life. So
growing up, let's get to the point where, so you're not out, you're a young man, in the church, the typical Mormon phraseology is you struggled with SSA.
Sure, yeah.
How do you navigate that world, or how did Greg navigate that world?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. That's a hard question to answer. It just felt like, well, this is part of my life and it's a trial, you know, the trial of homosexuality, like anybody else would have, and you just have to have faith in the Lord and move forward and, you know, you follow the steps and follow the plan and everything's going to be okay. So,
you mentioned a little earlier, you spoke with your bishop about it. Was this prior to your mission, after your mission?
Prior to my mission, yeah.
And so did you come out to your bishop?
Uh-huh.
Let's journey down that road a little bit.
He was a fantastic bishop, honestly. He basically just was like, you know, this is I'm trying to remember what he said. It's been so long. Basically, he was just very loving and supportive. And the message was, this isn't something that defines you. And you can lead a happy, healthy life and, you know, stay close to the Lord and all that.
I think it's a great
yeah.
response.
It was a fantastic response. Yeah.
If we had more bishops out there who were teaching about yeah. defining, not refining, or refining, not defining mm-hmm. experiences, how much better would we be
yeah.
in a much better position? So you serve a mission, mm-hmm. still knowing that you're gay. Mm-hmm. Did that cause any reservations in your world, knowing that you would be living with a companion, that you were constantly surrounded by other men?
Not at the time that I left. I ended up only being out for a year because I was 19 and full of hormones and didn't have a ton of self-control. So I came home after a year because the president, nothing really happened, but enough that my mission president and the people in Salt Lake thought it would be better if I was home. So I mean, I don't necessarily regret any of that. It's what happened, and I had a great experience on my mission. So
part of that journey, finding that mm-hmm. authentic and more honest part of Greg. Mm-hmm. So you come home, and let's talk about, tell us where life took you from there.
So after my mission, I went to Southern Utah University, graduated from there. In there, I went to Disney World to work for a semester, met some great people. After college, I moved up to Salt Lake and was living there for about 4 years, teaching school and performing in theater at night, community theater, and then decided to pursue a dream, I guess, and see if I could make it as an actor in LA. So I moved out there, and I've been there for a little over 8 years, and it's been great.
And we have mutual friends, so yeah. you're running with a good group of people, at least yeah. in LA.
Yeah, they're good people out there.
One of the things that drew me to wanting to do this interview is your desire to reach into the LDS community and try to build bridges, mm-hmm. try to connect this disconnect between sexuality and reality, between the LDS world and the LGBT world. Mm-hmm. And I ran across an interview or a sacrament meeting talk that you had given. Why? What compels you to try to make inroads within the church, knowing that you've now stepped away from the church? Mm-hmm. What is it that drives you to try to make a difference?
In that instance, it was the YSA ward in the area. The bishopric decided to do an LGBT-themed sacrament meeting. And so knowing that I was part of that community, they reached out and asked if I'd want to do a talk. And I'm always happy to share my story and share my thoughts with the community. I don't know that I'm very proactive about it, but when chances arise, I'm happy to share that. And so I think it's the idea that I didn't necessarily have a negative experience growing up myself, but I know most people do. And it breaks my heart that happens. And so I like to be an example of, for those in my community, an example of somebody who's living a healthy, fulfilled, stable life. And also maybe be that example for people in the church who may have misconceptions about what it means to be gay and Mormon. And I think there are a lot of misconceptions, whether that's because of doctrine or culture or a mix of the two. I think there's still a lot of misinformation out there, and there's a lot of... the church provides plenty of reasons for people not to love the LGBT community, even though the commandment is to love everyone.
What misinformation are you talking about?
I recently ran across a Twitter post from somebody where they went through and looked at every instance where a church leader said something about homosexuality for the last 80 years or something. And every single one was a negative connotation of some kind. We are abominations. We're evil. We're sinners. We're, whatever adjective you want to pick. And it was a list that went on for pages and pages and pages. And for an organization that understands how important language is, it is interesting to me that they use such loaded and frankly hateful language towards a group of people that exists within their own community. And so I think dispelling some of those misconceptions about, because in the church, the official stance is that you can be gay and that's okay. You just can't act on it, right? You can have those attractions as long as you don't do anything about them. But I think it's hard for the general membership to separate those two things. I don't know that we should separate those two things, but that's neither here nor there. And so when they use that kind of loaded language about homosexuality, it naturally gets mapped onto homosexuals. And so I think trying to help people see that we're people and we're just trying to do the best we can. And our path may look different than yours, and we may make choices that are different than yours, but it goes both ways. You make decisions that I don't agree with, but I can still love you, even if I disagree with you. And so I think helping people to see that and to live that better is something that I think is really important.
How do we break through? How do we make those inroads?
The problem is it's sort of a one person at a time kind of deal. There was a study that showed, I think this was on abortion, if you go door to door and talk to people and have somebody who's had an abortion talk to people, their minds change. But it's a one-on-one thing. It's really hard to change a culture as deeply entrenched and as strong as the Mormon culture is. So I think as people continue to have experiences with gay people in their lives and see that, you know, like, okay, well, your lifestyle doesn't match with my values, but that's okay because I know that you are doing good things in the world and you're a good person and you're happy. I think that's really how the change is going to happen.
I think there's also some element of this when I completely agree. When we begin to find out or we know someone who is impacted by this topic, things start to change. Mm-hmm. And I think we've noticed that within the hierarchy of the church as well. We have apostle. We have at least one apostle with a gay son. Mm-hmm. We have at least one apostle with a gay brother. Mm-hmm. And we have 70s who have gay children as well. And now we have members of wards and branches and stakes that are openly gay. Mm-hmm. And some even practicing, some married same-sex couples who still attend church. Mm-hmm. So I think these are all great ways of just saying, we're as normal as you are. Mm-hmm. This has been hyped up. And I agree. The difficult part the members of the church have is 80 to 100 years of rhetoric, mm-hmm. and difficult tradition,
yep.
where they've looked at statements from Boyd K. Packer and Spencer W. Kimball and so many who are a little misinformed about the way they dissected this topic. Mm-hmm. And now we have to undo that. And often we're undoing that because of real world experiences. Mm-hmm. So your bishop comes to you and says, Greg, I want you to speak in the YSA ward. Did he give you a topic? Did he allow you to?
No, he basically was just pretty much free reign, whatever you want to say on the topic. So,
and what did you choose? In your brain, what were you thinking?
Well,
I've got a bunch of people who are single.
Yeah.
How do I tackle this topic?
Yeah, I honestly don't remember my process. I knew that there were three of us who spoke in the sacrament meeting. One other gay man and a lesbian woman. And I figured they would probably be talking about their own experiences as gay people. And so for whatever reason, I chose to speak more to the congregation in terms of like, my story is my story and it's fine and you can read a million stories like mine, but what does that mean for you? So I chose to approach it from a place of like, here's what you need to know about us in general. And like, here's some ideas for you to help make this place feel safer for us.
And fortunately, you recorded it.
I did, yeah.
And fortunately for the podcast, you get to hear it as well.
Yeah.
Should we play it?
Sure. Let's go for it.
You scared?
Nope.
No, you shouldn't be. All right. Here's so this is LA.
Yeah.
Sacrament meeting.
Yeah, this is the Santa Monica YSA ward.
Little taboo. You recorded in sacrament meeting.
Oh, they knew. I put my phone right up on there.
I won't tell the bishop. You actually have great leaders. I've been to California a few times interviewing some stake presidents and bishops and working with them on this topic. And I've always blown away at how progressive and open some leaders are outside of Utah.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, but we are trying and doing our best, at least here in Utah, to open dialogue and have this conversation. So, Greg, here's your talk. Sacrament meeting, California. Let's play it.
Good morning, brothers and sisters. Thank you for allowing me to come and intrude on your ward. I am happy to speak today. I'm excited about it. Just a warning that I cry a lot, so that'll probably happen fairly quickly and consistently over the next 10 or 15 minutes. Since this is an LGBT sacrament meeting, I thought I would share a little bit of my story with you. I've known I was gay since I was 12-ish, somewhere in that area. I grew up in a very supportive, pretty traditional LDS family. My parents were amazing. I had some amazing leaders. And I know that my experience is fairly unique in that I was pretty happy and stable through all of that. I never had any instances of depression. I never felt like committing suicide and never felt like God didn't love me, and I feel very blessed for that. to any of you out there who identify as LGBT, I just want you to know that you are loved and important and valuable. You have so much to contribute. And most importantly, you're not alone. Now, Will and Sarah are going to have some amazing thoughts for you, but I want to focus on everybody else today, the 90 and 9, as it were. I want to share with those of you who fit comfortably into the straight paradigm some thoughts on how you can help create a safe space for those of us who don't. I will be speaking as a gay man today because that is my experience. But I feel safe in saying that the thoughts I share apply to anyone who finds themselves outside of the norms of sexuality and gender. I reached out to some people that I know in the gay Mormon community to see what they'd want to hear or see from our straight friends and allies. Two themes emerged, and I would like to address them both. First, it seems that despite the church's efforts to clarify its position on the subject, there are still some false ideas and misinformation going around about the issue of homosexuality. This is not something we chose, nor is it something that needs fixing. In fact, most of us probably wouldn't change it if we could. We are not broken. There is nothing wrong with us. I've had numerous conversations with people who say things like, well, if you just pray more, if you have more faith. I want to be very clear about something. The doctrine of the atonement is powerful. According to the scriptures, the atonement is infinite and all-encompassing. The atonement has the power to change. But I think in this situation, it's meant to change our hearts, not our attractions. The atonement is there to cleanse, heal, lift, comfort, and empower, which it can do regardless of sexual attraction. Besides, what happens to that young man or woman who hears, just pray a little more, have more faith, read the scriptures a little more, and it will all go away, and then it doesn't? Do you understand how harmful that mindset is? The fact is, my sexual preference for men has as little to do with my eternal salvation as my decorative preference for mid-century furniture. Now, apparently there are those among us who think that if someone is gay, that means they're automatically disregarding the law of chastity. But being gay doesn't mean we're breaking the law of chastity any more than being straight means you're keeping it. Some knowing chuckles there. We are not depraved. We are not perverted. We are not broken. We are whole, beautiful, complex people, just like all of you. Now, I know that a lot of what I'm saying here is preaching to the choir. But the fact is, you are all part of larger communities where harmful ideas and thoughts like this are still prevalent. And so now, your challenge is to stand up for us when we can't stand up for ourselves. You will be in gatherings or leadership positions where your words can have an impact. Please. Please. Have the courage to spread love and understanding. Don't stand idly by while people spread fear. Secondly, and overwhelmingly, the message I heard from my LGBT brothers and sisters, and that I feel myself, is that we, like all people everywhere, want desperately to be part of a community. And more than that, we deserve to be part of the community, just as you do. We want to feel welcome at church. We want to serve in meaningful ways, to love and be loved by those around us, to work out our relationship with God without the fear of hatred and rejection. I want to be very careful here about what I say next, because I recognize that it might trigger some defensiveness. in the past few years, the men in the top leadership positions of the church have said things and implemented policies that have been quite hurtful to a lot of people. This isn't about sustaining leaders or following the prophet or where you might stand on gay marriage. What this is about is recognizing that there are real people feeling real pain. And the fact is, if someone tells you you hurt them, you don't get to say that you didn't. I think now would be an excellent time to talk about empathy. Brené Brown is one of my favorite researchers and speakers from the last few years, and she has some powerful thoughts about empathy. She describes empathy like this. You're in the bottom of a dark hole, and you say, I'm scared, I'm stuck, I'm overwhelmed. And then someone climbs down in that hole with you and says, hey, I know what it's like down here. And you're not alone. The shortest scripture in our entire canon is perhaps also the most powerful scripture we have. Lazarus had died, and when Jesus was coming into town, Mary and Martha went out to meet him. They cried to the Lord and said, if you had been here, our brother wouldn't have died. The scriptures say that Jesus saw Mary and Martha weeping and all of the Jews that had come with them, and he groaned within himself. And in John chapter 11, verse 35, we read, Jesus wept. He wept. He didn't try to comfort them with silver linings or platitudes. Even though he knew that he could and would raise Lazarus, he practiced perfect empathy and sat in that pain and sorrow and wept with them. With that in mind, I'd like to remind you all of the promise you made when you were baptized. When Alma was preaching to the people in the wilderness by the waters of Mormon, he said, behold, here are the waters of Mormon, for thus were they called. And now, as ye are desirous to come into the fold of God and to be called his people and are willing to bear one another's burdens that they may be light, yea, and are willing to mourn with those that mourn, yea, and comfort those that stand in need of comfort. I want to reiterate that I don't think being gay or dealing with SSA or however you want to say it is a burden. Again, we are not broken. Nothing needs to be fixed. However, growing up LGBT in the church can often be accompanied by depression, self-loathing, and a very real sense of grief over the love, marriage, and family that may never happen. So, brothers and sisters, if you are willing to help bear those burdens, to mourn with we who mourn, and to comfort those of us who stand in need of comfort, here is what I would encourage you to do. Listen to the stories of your LGBT brothers and sisters. Really listen. Stories of those who are choosing to live lives inside the church and its teachings, and stories of those who are not. Resist the urge to prize or value one of those situations over the other. If you're hearing these stories in person, you might say, thank you for sharing that with me. I know it's not always an easy thing to talk about. Then go home, and on your own, follow the advice of the primary song, Search, Ponder, and Pray. Start with the church's website, mormonandgay.org. Look at organizations like North Star, Affirmation, I'll Walk With You. Reading up on this subject may bring up some questions. Don't be scared to ask them. But also, don't be scared to sit with the answers and practice empathy. The important thing is not that you get everything right or that you agree with everyone. The important thing is for you to help create a space and a community inside the church where people feel safe to work out their own relationship with God wherever that may take them. It is not your job to offer judgments, shoulds, or spiritual prescriptions. Your job as fellow travelers and followers of Christ is to provide love and understanding. To say, you know, I don't know exactly what you're going through, but when I encounter hard times in my life, here's something that helps me. If that also helps you, that's great. If it doesn't, I'd love to help and see what we can discover together. And understand that someone's journey may take them out of the church, but please, please don't abandon them. Church activity should not be a stick against which we measure someone's worthiness as a friend. The Apostle D. Todd Christofferson has a brother, Tom, who was with a gay partner for many, many years and recently returned to the church. He tells a story about his family when they were planning a family reunion of some kind, and some of the siblings were concerned about Tom and his partner being there because of the message that it would send to the younger children. Tom's father said, "You're right. If Tom and his partner come, the children will learn something. They'll learn that regardless of the choices you make, you are always a part of this family." Now, for a couple of other practical suggestions, give plenty of hugs. Research shows that hugs lasting at least 6 seconds optimize the flow of mood-boosting chemicals. Brethren, host a guy's night and invite us along. Sisters, host a girl's night and invite the lesbian sisters along. We need social interaction. Please make an effort to include us socially. Have discussions in Elders Quorum and Relief Society about the things you can do to help LGBT members of your congregation and solicit their advice. And not just in the YSA ward, but as you move on to the glories of the family ward. This may seem like a lot to do for such a small percentage of the population, but when compared with the number of marriage lessons we've had to sit through, I think it's merited. In fact, when preparing those lessons on marriage, take a second to think about how it's going to affect those who may have no hope of that in this life. Don't let the burden of likening the lesson always fall on our shoulders. Further, dating advice is not helpful. Now, there may be some discomfort around this issue for some of you. Lean into that. Be open about what you're feeling, but also be willing to find out how to grow out of that discomfort. I'll leave you with one final story. I know a woman who does not identify as LGBT, but she's very active in the community. When the president announced that the Army would no longer be accepting transgender people into the armed forces, she didn't judge, she didn't make any pronouncements. All that she said was, "Hey, I know there are some of you out there who are having a really hard day with this. If you need anything at all, let me know." At my house at 5 o'clock, and anyone is welcome to come over. And then people would write in and say, "You know, I could really use a night out with myself." She said, "Great, I just put $10 in your Venmo. Go see a movie and have fun." And this person I know is not a wealthy person, but this is one of the best examples of Christ-like love that I have ever seen. She didn't care what their situation was. She just knew that they might be hurting and was there to offer a shoulder. May we all strive to create a place of safety and refuge where we can come to know God and get closer to Him. In the name of Jesus Christ.
All right. So that was your talk.
Uh-huh.
How well was it received?
It was received great. Honestly, we had so much positive feedback, and the thing about that ward is it's all single people, they're young, and so it felt a little bit like preaching to the choir because they're all pretty much on board with everything I had to say anyway. But it was really good to just hear people say, like, you know, "We need to hear this and we need to hear more of this, and we're so grateful that you came to share your story and say these things." So it was overwhelmingly positive.
One thing that I liked about it was right in the beginning of the talk where you started comparing sin to sin, mm-hmm. where you said, "Here are all the things that you've heard about homosexuals. Does that make you any different, or is this experience any different because here are all the things the straight people are doing as well?
Mm-hmm.
What made you draw that parallel between, is it an issue of sin, or is it just an issue of you and I are more alike than you think?
I think it's more about that. Before giving the talk, I think I mentioned it in the talk, I just reached out to a bunch of my gay Mormon friends to say, like, hey, I'm giving this talk. What would you want, you know, the general membership to know? And a couple of people wrote back. I was actually surprised, saying things along the lines of, like, don't assume that just because we're gay that we're sinning. And so it was interesting to me to think, like, yeah, I mean, of course we're sinning. All of us make mistakes. But just because ours are talked about in such a loaded way doesn't mean they're any worse than yours or any different even. And it was kind of funny. You probably hear it in the talk. The one line says something like, the fact that we're gay doesn't mean we're breaking the law of chastity any more than the fact that you're straight means you're keeping it.
That's the part I loved.
And yeah. It was really funny for me to hear all the knowing laughter from the congregation being like, they're like, yeah, you're right. You know, like, none of us are any better than anybody else. We're all just trying to get through life the best way we can.
And it's back to putting that seal of living reality on this topic. When they can start making this make sense, because that is a very real, logical path that they can walk down and say, oh, we aren't any different.
Yeah.
That we all get up in the morning and struggle with the same things, and we, gay or straight, have bills to pay. Mm-hmm. We have a life to live. We have happiness to seek and authenticity to find. And that makes us more compatible and more alike than most people give us credit for. What was the reaction of your bishop after the talk?
I wasn't in the ward at the time. It was the bishop of the YSA ward. But I remember him being, again, very positive, very supportive. I'm not sure that we really went in the direction he was hoping we would with our talks. But
he was all, come follow me, Manuel.
Little bit, yeah. Yeah. And I was like, no. Even if we're different, you can still love us, which I think is the message of the church. But no, he was very supportive and very loving and very positive about the whole thing.
Any members of the congregation have comments about the talk? Because as we just listened, it's powerful. I thought it was a really great talk that was honest and real.
Well, thank you. Nothing that I remember, just general comments of gratitude and hope that this message continues to spread.
What is your message to the closeted individual who's listening to this podcast, who has not yet burst out of those dark walls of obscurity? Mm-hmm. What message do you have for them?
First off, that they're loved. I think I can't stress that enough, and I think it's something that we don't say enough. I think in theory, the brethren say that. In practice, the membership isn't always the best at it. And so just know that you are loved, and you have a community here that loves you regardless. The thing about being part of the LGBT Mormon community is that it's such a wide spectrum of faith and belief and practice, but my experience has been that wherever you fall on that spectrum, we're all still here for each other. And we're, I think at least, we're really good at supporting you wherever you're at. The other thing is, I think it can be dangerous sometimes to say, like, oh, you're still in the closet and you need to be your authentic self. And so I would caution you to take your time. This is your journey and it's your choice, and you need to do it in a healthy way, and a way that's going to bring you the most happiness and be the safest for you. So if you don't feel ready to open that door yet, by all means, keep living your life. When the time is right, you'll know. Sorry, I get emotional about this stuff, but I have some friends whose families are not especially supportive of them, and I know that can be heartbreaking and it hurts. But even though that community may not be there for you, again, there is a community that is here for you. We're here with open arms, ready to embrace you and ready to love you and ready to help you continue your journey wherever it leads you. And so I think that above every other message is the most important one to hear. You're loved. You're so loved.
You're going to make everybody cry on this podcast. Why is that so important?
Because I think that is I think that's important for everybody. I was just recently listening to some Brené Brown, speaking of Brené Brown, and she talks about how love and belonging are basic human needs. Then they apply to everybody. And when you grow up in a community like the church that has so many negative messages around homosexuality, it can feel like you don't have a community. And when that's all that you want and all that you're yearning for, when it feels like it's not there for you, that can be so hopeless. But even if that community isn't there for you, there is a community that's here. And it's a great community to be a part of. And so I think knowing that and keeping that hope alive, even as you struggle through the storm that is being gay and Mormon and figuring out what that means for you, knowing that there's a base of support can really give you a lot of hope.
The thing that I appreciate too about the LGBT community, there's such a wide variety within in the community. I've met people who are closeted and fear coming out because they don't fit into the stereotypical scene. They don't fit into this perception of what it is to be gay. And I appreciate that there are all walks of life in this experience, and that there are as many, I've said this often in the podcast, but there are as many plans of salvation as there are people. And there are as many ways to be gay as there are people who are gay. And you don't have to be glitter toting rainbow fabulous to have to come out or feel like that is what it's like to be gay. But you can be quite the contrary. You could bathe in sagebrush. And there are gays who do that too. And so that community, that herd exists out there. And I agree with you 100%. It is the desire and the longing to find your community. And I also have learned over the last few years that when people lose that sense of community, then we start losing people. That's where suicidal ideation comes in. That's where that loss of connection begins to eat at their desire to live. And that's why it's so important. That's why stories like this are so vital to the landscape, to help people know that there is a place for them. What is your message and advice to parents who may suspect they have a gay child or their child just came out? What message, what advice do you give to them as they begin to navigate this course?
I think first and foremost, love your child and make sure they know that you love them.
What does that mean to love? Because I hear that so often. Love, and no sides, only love. The great encircle phrase. But what does it mean to love?
I mean, I think along the same lines, it's different. You know, there are many ways to love as there are people. And I think that you should know your child well enough to know how they feel love. And I mean, I think just giving them a hug and saying, I love you, is a great place to start. And then you can continue to have conversations with your child about how they're best going to be supported and feel loved. And that, again, that's going to look different for every person, but there are, you know, read up, find out what sorts of language are problematic, you know, watch how you talk about gay people around your children, and with your children. Watch how you talk about your children. And I think it's also important for parents to know that the likelihood of your child staying in the church is low. They will most likely choose a different path. And I think being aware of that up front and figuring out how to go through the grieving process of that, because it will be a grieving process, I'm willing to grant that. Because it's, you know, it's maybe not what you've hoped for your child. And so that's a very real thing. But I think you need to handle that on your own. That's not something that your child needs to process with you, because they're going through a hell of their own, you know. And then figuring out how to best support your child and let them know that they're loved and make sure that they are making healthy choices, even if they're choices you disagree with, there's a way to be healthy about it. So I think learning, reading up, loving your children, making sure that they are making good choices and choices that are going to be fulfilling and happy for them. I think those are great ways to support your kids.
Where did you find support as you made this journey? What was it, friends, online support groups? Where did Greg turn for support?
Mostly friends. My friends are very important to me, and having that community of people, even if I don't need to talk stuff out because I internally process a lot, but just knowing that there are people there for me if I need them is hugely important for me. And I found that mostly in person, but I know there are some great online communities available, and I have been in chat rooms or on message boards and stuff like that as well.
One of the great messages, I sometimes call it the Great Mormon message, is that there is no happiness on this side of the aisle. There will be a loss of blessings, a loss of happiness, a reduction of the spirit. Mm-hmm. How do you navigate that world?
It's interesting because I feel like my own journey with my faith and where I'm at with the church is sort of separate from my sexuality. I mean, they're obviously intertwined, but a lot of my reason for stepping away from the church has nothing to do with my sexuality. But it's about recognizing that the things I'm supposed to feel in the gospel are available in a lot of other places too. And so finding those places where I feel joy and where I feel a connection to God, whatever that means, and finding those moments to be still and be quiet, even if they don't occur in church, I know that they're still out there, and I can lean into my own authority and my own ability to connect with God and say, oh, this is one of those moments, and this is one of those times. And sometimes that happens in church, and sometimes it doesn't, and it's okay that both of those things are true. You know?
I love it. Because this is a predominantly LDS supported audience. Mm-hmm. What message do you have for leaders of the church who, I mean, we've seen a lot of change happen over the last few months, mm-hmm. where the rescinding of the November 2015 policy, that has stopped, mm-hmm. A lot of discontent in terms of excommunications and labels of apostasy within the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. What is your advice to church leaders? Let's tackle this in two sections, local leaders and then maybe general leadership, the first presidency or apostles. What can the local leaders do to better assist the LGBT community?
Two things. One is work to involve LGBT members in the wards in your congregation as much as you would anybody else. They say that every member needs a calling, a friend, and to be nourished by the good word of God. And it feels like those things are really easy for straight married people in the church, not always for single people, and especially not always for single gay people. So making sure that those three things are in place. And a lot of times it feels like in church, the church is built in such a way that if somebody is straight and married, we say, oh, come right in. Here's your seat right here at the table. And it's all set out for you. And if somebody gay comes in, or somebody single, or somebody divorced, or somebody who doesn't fit the box, we say, oh, sure. Come on in. Give us just a second. We'll find a place for you. And so I think welcoming people into the church and knowing where their place is and saying, we have a place for you and it's right here. I think that would go a long way towards helping people feel safe and welcome at church. That's, I think, for local leaders, figuring out how to do that. And I think the best way to do that is to talk to actual people in the LGBT community about what's going to make them feel welcome and safe at church. It feels like getting onto the more general leadership of the church, it often feels like they make decisions about our community without consulting our community. And that's not to say that they need to change doctrine. You know, that's a discussion for another day. But I think it would go a long way towards making people feel safe in the church if the upper leadership, instead of having conversations with themselves and making decisions about us, if they would involve the LGBT community in those decisions. Even if the decision doesn't change, at least we were involved in the process of that decision being made. And, you know, it would be really easy for them to say, like, hey, here's the thing we're concerned about. What are your thoughts on that? What do you think we could do to make you feel more welcome and more loved and safer at church? What are some policies that we could implement without changing doctrine that would help you to feel more loved and more included and more more useful in this community? And it sort of amazes me that the church doesn't do that more. I mean, they have a PR department, so, you know, they're willing to clean the mess up, but it feels like an ounce of prevention would be a little more useful, you know?
But they've driven erratically through every street that we have paved and mm-hmm. tried to remove every boulder from in order to make this journey a little easier for those who are coming behind us. Mm-hmm. Really interesting. What about your advice to those parents who, and this just kind of wraps up the church side of it, mm-hmm. who would just stalwartly believe that this is the covenant path, mm-hmm. that everything that's on this side of the aisle is apostate still. Mm-hmm. How do we reach in and just focus back on this policy of love and help this to become a little bit easier?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, you're not going to change everybody, you know, you're not going to reach everybody. But I think being willing to have those hard conversations and being willing to be vulnerable and open and say, like, this is my experience and these are the things that I believe. And, you know, even saying, here's how you can make me feel more loved and more appreciated. And I think that goes a long way towards changing people. And it's going to be hard. They're going to be tough conversations and they're not always going to go well. And it's going to be a rocky process. But as soon as we give up on that, then we've already lost, you know?
Great. Greg, I appreciate the interview.
Yeah.
Any last final words that you want to tell the podcast, those listening? A wide variety of listeners. Listeners who are closeted, listeners who are out, listeners who are looking for that extra ounce of help to get on to tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then those who are allies and supporting the cause.
I think it all just comes back to love. You're loved, and just be a person who is good at loving. And if you're not, figure out how to do that.
One step at a time.
One step at a time.
One podcast at a time.
Yeah. Yep.
Again, Greg, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for spending a few minutes with us and sharing your story, vulnerable as it is.
Yeah. Well.
And a few tears. Mm-hmm. Those are always a bonus.
What I'm here for.
Thanks again.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
It's another Latter-day Stories podcast in the box. We thank you for giving us a few minutes to share this episode with you. If you are watching the Latter-day Stories podcast on our YouTube channel or our Facebook page, we invite you to make comments below and join in the discussion. This podcast is also recorded and distributed through our podcast channels, through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and others. We invite you to subscribe to the channel in which you're catching this podcast and also leave us a rating there. You will also find additional stories and episodes by visiting our Latter-day Stories website at lattergaystories.org. The Latter-day Stories podcast is brought to you to help you navigate this journey between sexuality and reality. But most importantly, it gives you an opportunity to continue writing your Latter-day story.
This episode is a production of Latter-day Stories. We are always looking for new friends. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Latter-day Stories. The podcast is made possible because of generous donors like you. Make a donation now by texting the word STORIES to 77948. Your donation gives us the ability to build bigger bridges by producing more Latter-day Stories. Want more? Find this episode and others online at lattergaystories.org.